Insurance giant AIG sheds some more.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. It's the Morning Open. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A new plan to help homeowners at risk, and the tech bubble burst 10 years ago this week. Where are they now? All that's ahead. First, where's Wall Street? The NASDAQ up about, 0.03%, and the S&P and Dow pretty much flat right now. The Dow at 10,561. In Europe, investors are cautious about French President Nicolas Sarkozy's pledge of European support for debt-heavy Greece. Shares are a little higher in Europe right now, and markets in Asia, they were up 2% or more in trading today. AIG, as we said at the top, is selling its Alico Life and Health Insurance unit to MetLife. It's a $15.5 billion deal, and the assets will help AIG repay billions that it received in government aid. Bill Stone is Chief Investment Strategist at PNC Wealth Management. He's with us live this morning from Philadelphia. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
So AIG is selling this Alico, which is what the American Life Insurance Company, right?
Exactly.
How is this going to go down? Who gets paid first?
Well, it's really, as I understand it, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that's going to be paid back, or I guess partially paid back so far first.
The Federal Bank, the Reserve Bank, right, which is a unit of the Federal Reserve in general.
Exactly.
And so why do they get paid first? Why not the federal? I mean, we're thinking $182 billion that the American taxpayer has given AIG. Why not to the federal government?
Well, they were as part of the deal that they would be paid back first. So, that was part of their deal that they structured with AIG as part of, I guess you would call it, the beginning of the rescue package that, as you pointed out, continued seemingly on and added up to those many billions.
And the company still owes, as I said, tons of money to the federal government. I mean, so at some point, do you think they're going to keep shedding these foreign businesses and these other subsidiaries to get more money back to the federal government?
I think that is their plan, is to divest themselves of a significant number of assets in order to pay back the government and, like you said, in essence, us. And this is actually the second major divestiture of the month.
Of the month, that's right. They sold off AIA, right?
Yeah, and which was even bigger. That was about $35.5 billion.
Can we read anything broader into this? I mean, forget about how much money is owed and all of that. I mean, what about from the acquisition standpoint?
Well, I think it definitely points to the fact that mergers and acquisitions activity is, probably on its way up because risk aversion is down. You know, I'd also say that it seems to indicate that the capital markets are open for these kind of deals because MetLife, as part of this deal, there who's buying this company from AIG, is selling both stock and debt to fund the cash portion.
All right. Bill Stone, thanks. We appreciate it. New plan goes into effect early next month. It'll pay people to short sell their homes at a lower price than that home is worth. The aim to focus on homeowners who are at risk of foreclosure. Marketplace's Elisa Roth has the details.
The government says it'll offer cash incentives to everybody involved. The bank that services the mortgage would get $1,000. So could the bank that owns the mortgage. And the homeowner would get $1,500 in relocation assistance. That doesn't sound like a lot of money for the homeowner, but if the other option is just losing your home, then it might not be a bad deal. Chris Mayer is a real estate professor at Columbia's Business School.
If you think the alternative is a foreclosure anyway, then it might be enough.
Mayer says the bigger problem could be second mortgages or liens. He guesses that about half the people who are in trouble with their houses also owe money to a second bank. And having another party at the negotiating table makes things that much more complicated.
Because you need both parties to get together to agree on a resolution. And there's frankly no incentive for the second lien holder to do that because they're going to be wiped out.
But he says it's almost always in everybody's best interest to avoid foreclosure because it's expensive. It ruins the homeowner's credit, and it lowers property values for everybody else. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, March 8th, 2010, at marketplace.org. Critics say China's currency is undervalued, but it may not stay that way for long. Over the weekend, a top Chinese leader gave the most direct suggestion to date that an appreciation is in the offing. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Asia correspondent Scott Tong reports.
China's currency level is pegged to the dollar, or at least it has been for the last year and a half. But Beijing's top central banker calls that a temporary response to the world recession that will be withdrawn sooner or later. Critics say China's currency is artificially low. Think of it this way. If a Chinese factory exports a fleece blanket for $3 wholesale, a higher currency could make it $4. Good for competing countries, bad for China. So why would Beijing do it? For one, to get Washington off its case, says economist Tao Wang at UBS Securities.
The RMB really has been a target for a long time. And this year, I think the rise of protectionist legislation could become more real.
A currency boost would also help Chinese consumers. They'd have more buying power to import, say, oil from Angola or wine from California. China wants to be less dependent on exporting low-cost junk and more dependent on consumers at home. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Lawmakers in Arizona aren't waiting for the federal government to tackle immigration reform. A bill is working its way through the state legislature that would take a hard line with illegal immigrants. It's expected to have enough support to pass, but some say it goes too far. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has more.
Under the proposal, undocumented immigrants could be arrested under beefed-up trespassing laws, and working as a day laborer would be a crime.
We make it a misdemeanor for anybody to solicit employment.
That's Arizona State Senator Russell Pierce, who sponsored the bill.
It will be the toughest enforcement bill in the nation.
Maybe too tough. Some critics of the bill foresee lawsuits related to racial profiling. And the bill would allow anyone to sue local agencies for failing to enforce immigration laws. That could be expensive, says Mike Frazier, a board member of the Arizona Association of Chiefs of Police.
If found guilty, let's say, and it's been several months, and you're being fined anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 a day, a fine like that could almost put some governmental entities out of business.
Frazier also worries that rounding up undocumented immigrants will pose a burden for smaller police forces, potentially slowing response times for 911 emergencies. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
In Atlanta, Georgia today, J.P. Morgan Chase is going to be defending a tire dump. You heard right. The bank is in trouble for failing to clean up thousands of old tires on some property that the city thinks it owns. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson explains.
Whether J.P. Morgan should be responsible for cleaning up the abandoned lot in Atlanta will be up to the judge. But Cassandra Torian says the situation the bank finds itself in will only become more common thanks to all the foreclosures we've seen over the past few years. Torian is a bank analyst with Bellrock Capital.
There's banks of all sizes that now are not only in the banking business, but also in the property management business for the time being.
She says the firms will have to load up on lawyers and create asset management teams to deal with issues like taxes and maintenance for all the properties they now own.
You know, their alternative would be to fire sale a lot of these properties. And, you know, no bank that I've spoken with thinks that that's a good idea.
She says banks are betting the better idea is to delay and pray that home prices rise and they can start selling again. Until then, does anyone have a lawnmower J.P. Morgan can borrow? In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
It's no surprise Avatar won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects last night. A lot of that had to do with the so-called performance capture technology that records an actor's movements digitally and then allows them to be manipulated for the big screen. Think giant blue humanoids with tails. But as Julia Simon reports, the technology is opening up a whole set of questions about what constitutes acting and how it should be compensated.
I'm sitting with actor Ron Botita in his home in Los Angeles, watching scenes from the recent Jim Carrey movie, A Christmas Carol.
There I am driving the carriage on the right. I'm also all the male extras in the back here. And here I am singing.
Botita's showing me how he was able to play at least 40 roles in a single film as a performance capture actor.
There's a lot of times that you're actually acting with yourself. It makes your head spin sometimes.
Performance capture is opening up new doors for actors like Botita. But right now, Hollywood producers don't always recognize performance capture as acting. Some pay the actors as stuntsmen or dancers.
It's acting is acting is acting.
Actress Jackie Barnbrook is part of a new Screen Actors Guild committee to look at performance capture pay issues.
Ultimately, performance capture acting is a skilled ability, and so the committee is just going to address the standard contract terms that would apply to any actor.
And that includes setting a minimum pay rate for this type of work, because performance capture technology is expected to show up in more and more films. But casting director Victoria Burrows says that actors shouldn't worry about computers taking their jobs. She said an actor's talent can't be denied, no matter how many layers of technology are put over it.
If you have an inner life, it comes through, and, you know, the eyes are the windows of the soul, and you have to have that in order to emote something.
The Screen Actors Guild begins negotiating its new contract later this year, and it's likely that all forms of emoting will be on the table. In Los Angeles, I'm Julia Simon for Marketplace.
This week marks the 10th anniversary of the peak of the tech bubble when the Nasdaq soared to a record high. A decade on, a lot of those stocks are mired in values about half of what they were. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us this morning to talk about how to commemorate this anniversary. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
Why did tech stocks start tanking in the first place?
Because they were priced at insane levels relative to their earnings. The Nasdaq had run up 80% in a year. And people said, my God, what have we done? And if you look at a chart from those days, you see the thing just started heading down. And still today is less than half of what it was, even though many of the companies that have survived are much better than they were and much richer. Their stock prices are still down from what they were.
Couldn't, when we were sort of climbing that mountain, Alan, back in the 80s and 90s, couldn't we see this coming?
I mean, with all due respect, I saw it coming. There were about maybe half a dozen of us senior business journalists who kept saying that. We were just sort of overrun until one day, suddenly, we became prophets.
And what lesson did we learn, O prophet?
Well, the lesson I learned is if everyone's telling you to buy a house or everyone's telling you to buy tech stocks, that's probably the time you should think of doing something else.
What are the tech stocks of today, do you think, Alan? What sectors should we watch for the next bubble?
Well, the obvious one, a long-term U.S. Treasury securities, because I don't doubt the Treasury's ability to print dollars and repay its debts. But I think interest rates on these things, like many people think, are going way, way up. And if you buy a 30-year Treasury now, I think you're going to come to regret it.
So then how's this going to pan out? Who's going to be affected by this?
Well, anybody who owns 30-year treasuries is going to see the value of his investment way down when the interest rates on them go way up. And my bet would be over the life of this, you'll probably lose 25 or 30% of your money. But I guess we'll have to reconvene in 30 years and see if I was right.
Our prophet, Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, ever since former Tonight Show host Conan O'Brien left his gig on NBC, he's been hanging out a lot on Twitter. A few days ago, he randomly picked someone to follow on the social networking site, 19-year-old Sarah Killen. All the publicity he's gotten Sarah in the LA Times and an interview on MTV. Before Conan started following her, she had 3 followers. Today, where is it today? 16,612. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.